Hi, everybody. I'm Ian Barrett.
And I'm Erin Hayes.
And welcome to Business Beat on WICN. Erin, who do we have on the show today?
Today, we're going to be speaking with Peter DeCaro, CEO of Resonate Incorporated.
So right off the bat, I just want to let you know that the marijuana business in Massachusetts is burgeoning nationwide. Things are going on. And whether you are somebody who has partaken or doesn't, I think this is going to be a really interesting topic because you're talking about manufacturing, you're talking about distribution, you're talking about rules and regulations. It's a brewery times 1,000, I guess, when it gets to that. So let's get into the conversation.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to Business Beat on WICN. I am here myself, Ian Barrett from Media Boss, with Erin Hayes from Media Boss and David Ginsberg.
Hello,
how are
everybody.
You?
I'm great, thanks.
David is the top dog around here. You have brought some wonderful guests, and then you have yet another wonderful guest. Could you please introduce our guest?
Very excited to welcome Peter DeCaro from Resonate.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Resonate. Now, let's see. Right, I stroke my chin on the radio, and I ask myself, what resin, I'm thinking sound, but it's spelled differently, R-E-S-I-N-A-T-E. So, resin.
You are in the cannabis business.
I am.
Excellent deduction.
So, I'm the CEO of Resonate. Resonate was originally Medicinal Alternatives. Okay. So, we've been going through the application process now for a couple of years, and when we started, we had primarily a medical focus.
Right.
However, as the regulations changed throughout this period, we decided that we needed to change the name to something that would reflect our mission, you know, our core values, and we finally settled on Resonate.
Well, first of all, how long did that process take?
You know, it didn't take us too long. I'm fortunate that I have such a great management team around me. I mean, we spent a lot of time to quantify and really talk through what our corporate values and what our mission was, and when we had that, you know, from there, we wanted to tie it to the industry. And it took a little time to get there, but, you know, ultimately, we got across the finish line fairly quickly.
Well, the best part about it is, like I said, for people who know, they know what it is. And for people who don't know, they're not offended. And then you've got a great color scheme. You've got a really cool logo. It goes from green to blue or blue to green.
Thank you.
Saying all positive things, good wavelength. So, I mean, there's a lot going on there. We appreciate that. That's what the business we're in. We like marketing that's done well. We good like good logos. We like good names. So that's a big part of the game because there's a lot of people coming out there and you need to get out ahead of the pack.
So I guess I need to explain the background a little bit more. When I jumped into the cannabis market, you know, one of the first things that we were concerned with was the stigma. Mm-hmm. You know, it was quite evident when you look at the medicinal releases and right. You know, all of the case studies that are circulated around social media around how cannabis is helping everybody. And we said we wanted to embrace that. You know, we wanted to embrace it from the sense that the black market and the caregivers in this community, they've been satisfying and serving patients for years, and they've done so without any recognition, but they've really pushed this agenda for us here in the U.S. over a long period of time. And we said, well, one thing that we want to do as an organization is we're committed to producing high-quality products, and we're committed to producing high-quality service. And in doing that, we felt that the resin of the plant is kind of the play on words there. Right. Obviously, we're pulling that in as part of the cannabis. But the other piece for Resonate was that we're trying to celebrate the use of cannabis in every fashion, from medicinal, whether it be recreational, whether it's in terms of wellness. It's not just all about the cliche of becoming high or getting high.
Right.
You know, it's about how are you treating yourself to get to your desired outcome? How do you want to feel? How do you want to, and we want people to come to us to celebrate that story. And we want to appeal to different audiences and different demographics in doing it. So our mission is to provide these high quality products, not just around the recreational use, but around wellness and getting people to that desired outcome across all demographics. And we created this environment of, you're talking about resonating, about people coming in and sharing that story and warmth and talking about how can we push this agenda as an industry.
Right, well, that's exactly the part of it, the resonating, actually the timing for it, because that's the problem with your industry. You can't get investors because investors don't want money going to something that's not going to be successful. You need to grow and develop because other people are growing and developing. Banks don't know if they're able to physically take this money and do anything with it. Legislation isn't even up to speed with the things that you're talking about doing in a marketplace. So they can't regulate something that they can't even identify. There were a lot of challenges to this, and I didn't think personally anybody was taking anything to market, and next thing you know, it's legal in Massachusetts, and you can just go down and go get it. So, David, what happened?
You know,
yeah, David.
I may have dabbled in the black market years ago, a time or two, you know.
I might have saw you there.
Yeah, that was you. I thankfully don't have to go behind the bleachers at the high school anymore. Aside from the fact that it's legal for recreational use in Massachusetts, you can walk into a retail store and it's a cool experience to walk in and you still feel like you're doing something illicit even though it's legal. But I'm fascinated by the business side of it because there's so much competition. People that want to get into the business, they see green, and not that kind of green, but they see dollar signs. And the regulatory process you had to go through to get your license to open is so arduous. I would love to hear a little bit more about how you navigated all of that successfully, because it's a years-long process to actually get licenses to open.
So we have 30 minutes.
We have 30 minutes.
Okay, so...
Well, first of all, there's a limited number, correct? What's the number? What's the limit right
so,
now?
So when the Patrick administration originated the program, it was definitely the Wild West. When Charlie Baker came in, when Governor Baker came in and streamlined the process, we began to really gain a lot of traction. So the early phases was really around educating the business, the political, the regulatory community about all of the benefits associated with cannabis. But not just the benefits, but also some of the pitfalls. And I think that Massachusetts and the political administration, and I mean that, you know, across the state, including all municipalities, state reps, state senators, I think they've done a great job of pushing an agenda that puts Massachusetts in a leadership position in terms of the implementation of the program. Yes, regulations are difficult. Building code and zoning were moving targets. So we needed to do a lot of extra work to understand, you know, where we could exist and how we could exist. But I have to say that once this administration moved in here in the state of Massachusetts, things became a lot more streamlined quickly. Mm-hmm. The challenge is, and I think we're seeing it now when you know we're seeing this vape issue, this vaping ban that's hitting, you know, the country. And I think that's a true testament to what we need to do as an industry, right? What we need to do as a society. We have products that consumers are going to consume, they're going to inhale, they're going to eat, they're going to smoke. And there's a responsibility that we have to put high quality products out into the market that are going to ultimately be safe for consumers, you know, to enjoy. So I feel that even though the regulatory requirement has been strict, I think it's responsible, you know, and I think that it does to a certain extent, no pun intended, weed out operators that may not have experience in manufacturing or product development. It does pose a lot more challenges for those that are not entering the market from at least one business angle. Mm-hmm. You know, my background was in manufacturing and business development, so I've been doing this for, you know, 20 plus years in a business leadership capacity. So for us to understand what the state was trying to do in terms of metrics, you know, barcoding and RFID technology and all those requirements, it was really kind of secondary to us. So it allowed us to move as quickly as one could. The challenge is financially in raising capital, yeah, exactly, and managing that certainly has been a challenge. I mean, I've seen it all at this point. I've seen it from at a time when people were entering the market, mm-hmm, and it was plentiful, and everybody, there was an audience out there who really wanted to understand cannabis and jumped in early. And then when Attorney General Sessions rescinded the Cole memo, that pretty much sent a freeze throughout the industry.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, so any kind of private or alternative type of funding dried up and it was unavailable. And ultimately, when you went back out to the investor community to raise capital, it took a little bit of time. But we were still in a very new market, so there was a lot of interest. A lot of investors came to the table. For us, we were lucky. We built a shareholder team, I'll call it, of a pretty small and narrow group that has been highly supportive of our business goals and objectives. So it's helped us to kind of stay the course.
Yeah. I mean, let's go back to the vaping thing really quickly, because it's definitely something that's on my mind, and it's definitely something I'm glad that Baker shut it down. 100%, I'm totally in support of that. If I don't see another vape device again, I'll be okay with it, because quite frankly, it too much, too quick, too soon. And the tobacco industry really saw this as the way to connect with the next generation and put a new delivery system for nicotine into people's hands. The fact that it paralleled with people's interest or ability to obtain marijuana for medical or recreational is neither here nor there. It really was a tobacco industry driven initiative. Juul devices in them of themselves, I mean, are just the worst. If you know high school kids or whatever, the addiction level and the fact that you could hide this in your pocket. There's no smoking in the boys' room here. This is like it's right in your pocket. They're doing it in class. They're doing it, you know, all the time. There was no regulation there. And so it definitely needs to get stopped and looked at again. Once that gets straightened out, I think it's an ideal situation when properly regulated to actually deliver, your product, but for sure there's something wrong here.
We would never want to produce a product that could lead to someone's poor health or ultimately even untimely death.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. I mean, on one hand, we're in the business of wellness. You know, you brought up a really good point earlier, you know, when we talked about how this industry emerged and ultimately what happened, right? They put it in the hands of the entrepreneurs, right? Not the medical community, not the government, but said, look, business leaders, take this thing and let's push this agenda. So now we have this real issue, and it is a real issue. I mean, there are people all over the country. I mean, I've heard statistics that continue to roll, but we've had over 500 cases of various forms of pneumonia that may have formed. Right. And ultimately, we go back to popcorn lung and some of these other, you know, cases that have come up. So this is absolutely a real issue. There's been certain claims that have come out in the market regarding additives and synthetic products that people are using as cutting agents to get the oil to a specific viscosity in order to vaporize. The truth is, and we're following this research every day, we don't have that bottom line yet. We don't know what it is. So I think Governor Baker, you know, again, I think it just exemplifies the leadership in the state of Massachusetts. I think that it needed to be done. I agree with you 100% that the tobacco industry and the nicotine industry obviously did lead the way here. Are we somewhat of a tag along? Potentially. I mean, but there are cases that are coming out where we are seeing, and in fact, there was one released today, a civil case that was out in the Midwest, and I believe it was a former service member who was consuming cannabis, and over a period of time in a certain number of brands, he has developed this syndrome. So I look at that and I say, we certainly don't want to be in any position where that end result would affect our patients and consumers. Right. That's the end all be all. So I think that I would agree with you. I think the government needed to step in any capacity. And if Governor Baker did that and pushed that leadership agenda, great for him, because I think we need to correct it. We need to get after the problem. We have to do it immediately. And we have to find a solution, because here's the other side, right? The inconvenience is the tobacco industry. It's with kids and, you know, I have kids and obviously that's a concern to me. But on the other hand, there are patients and consumers that are using those products.
Right.
So I'm not going to speak about the tobacco side of the industry, but from the cannabis side, we don't want to see the product go away. We want to see it corrected, and we ultimately want to just see a better end result.
I agree with that. So you've also, speaking of delivery systems, I mean, you've developed lots of ways to ingest consumables. Let's just say it. And that is one, and we talk about innovation. This industry goes from hard candy to like to cookies to like to oil to whatever, chocolate, whatever. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. And in a lot of ways, that's what I like, because the point is you give your body the ability to ingest it the way your body would ingest it properly over a period of time, and then you can manage it more correctly. Right. So, you know, talk to me about that. Talk to me about how that's changed your industry.
Let me tell you that we toured the country during this process of opening Resonate and in designing our overall facility. And our cultivation campus and lab and kitchen is completely state of the art. It's second to none. It is complete with automation, from soup to nuts. It is as close to a biotech or medical grade facility that you'll probably see in the cannabis industry. We deploy completely a clean room environment under a controlled environment system, which means that we are controlling all of the temperatures, relative humidity, down to single percentages, with the idea that we're going to produce the highest quality cannabis that you can produce out of a particular strain, you know, and obviously with the greatest yields. But under the least operating cost. We did this because, well, I'm based in Worcester, and I'm from Worcester, the Worcester area. And the commitment was to build a site that would satisfy central Massachusetts in a way that the residents here would be proud of. We've heard about what California is doing. We've heard about what Nevada is doing in Oregon and Colorado, et cetera, et cetera. So we've toured the country, and we've spoken to operators across all these states. And when we came back, we came back to Massachusetts with this mission to say, okay, we need to lead the way. We need to build a site, and we need to produce a product line that's also going to be considered a leader in the market. So what do? So we went out and we hired a gentleman in charge of our product development by the name of Andrew Schatz, former executive pastry chef at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas, has won worldwide awards for bringing products to the market in the culinary space, particularly in the lines of chocolate and candies and confection. Recognized by USA Today, the Food Network. I mean, we went to a leader in the space to say, we want to produce high quality, safe products for our consumers. How do we do that? And we built a product line that we're bringing to market here in the next few months that's all natural, vegan. I mean, these are no artificial flavors, no artificial sugars. Like, these are true, almost purely organic products that we can bring to the market. And anyone with any type of medical condition or history can grab one of those and say, hey, I can have this, right? Gluten-free, I mean, the list goes on and on. So we've taken this position that we are going to produce, and that's, again, hence getting into the Resonate theme, the highest quality products, you know, the safest products that we can for our consumers and patients, and that's the direction we're going in. So yes, it's funny, it starts with a gummy, right? Everyone talks about the gummies. Yeah. Well, they're also beef and pork based, and they're made with, you know, the feed of these. Well, you know, ours are all natural. That's not one of the products that we're carrying. Many companies out in the space that we've seen are using coatings and chocolate coatings to produce their products. We're using some of the finest chocolate that you can buy across the world that we're shipping in here from all over. So we're taking a much different approach to this industry. Now, this doesn't necessarily translate into higher costs or higher prices for our patients and consumers.
Well, if you're trying to be an industry leader, you have to set the bar someplace. Coming from someone who's never even participated, I actually respect the industry, and I respect the things that you're saying to me about your care in it, because it means a person like me can have an association with someone like yourself, and I see you as an entrepreneur, see you as someone who's doing a service for the community, and I think about things like pediatric cancer, and I think about situations where, like, parents are in a situation where they have no alternative, and they're being held hostage by health regulations and pharmaceutical companies that want to sell things at a certain volume that make it completely unaffordable to take care of a situation. And I definitely see that this is one of the last great disruptive industries out there. And that's why I think I was particularly shocked that they were able to pass this legislation and get out there, because I thought Big Pharma is going to shut this down across the board and then run it another way. So I'm sure I'm not telling you anything you haven't had nightmares about, but that's where I'm coming from.
Amongst the few of the things that keep you awake at night, right? You know, it's interesting because I feel like as a society, you've come to trust certain things. We've come to trust the food. Mm-hmm. We've come to trust alcohol and the messages that come through the news, the outlets, and social media, et cetera, et cetera. When you look at things like the alcohol industry, there, you know, other than the fact that, you know, you achieve a certain result when you take that, it's not very good for our bodies, right? So for us, you know, looking at cannabis, and I mean, yes, we've seen it in treating patients that have cancer, that are going through chemo and fibromyalgia and CPRS. I mean, we've seen the end results, and it's amazing. I mean, you know, we've seen people through products like Rick Simpson Oil who have designed a product and have actually reverse the course on what was a terminal cancer diagnosis. I mean, this is powerful stuff, and the research isn't behind it, right? Mm-hmm. So I can't speak for all operators in the space, but I'm sure I speak for many when I say that we feel that we have a sense of responsibility to continue this research, right? And to be leaders in the field and to try to get these products out to the community. Because again, it's not all about, and I think the opiate epidemic has taught us this, right? Like, I'm a cancer survivor, so I'll share that with you openly. And you know, for me, I did not treat cannabis as any part of that process. However, what I did see firsthand is how the opiate epidemic,
mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep.
It takes place, and how it initiates, and how it, yeah. I see the impact of that. I've been on that front line, and I pushed it off to say, wait a minute, why are you even treating me with this? Like, I don't want any of this. Right. So I've seen that. And when I look at cannabis and you look at all the things that it's doing, again, medicinally and even recreationally, you can't ignore it. It's a safer alternative in many cases to any alcoholic beverage that you could consume, right? I mean, you don't have the calories associated with it unless, again, it's a chocolate. I mean, then again, that's a whole different conversation.
Right.
Cut back on your chocolate, right?
Right.
Exactly. You know, but there was an interesting article I remember I read a couple of years ago, and it was about an investment banker that was traveling on the train home every day from New York City. And every day he said, well, I got home, I'd have two glasses of scotch. And by the second glass of scotch, you know, maybe I felt like playing with my kids, or maybe I sent them to bed, one or the other. And that particular person changed course and took a gummy, a small, low dose, 5 milligram dose of cannabis through an edible product. He said, it took about an hour for that to set in. So by the time he got home, and there was never a question as to wanting to spend time with the kids. So he was no longer consuming alcohol every day, but so there was a safer alternative. Right. And I think that that's, a lot of what we need to do as an industry, even on the recreational side, right? There's this idea that, it's all a certain stereotype of people that are going to come in and they're all looking to get high and they want this the strongest. Well, that's not always the case. Believe it or not, that's probably not even half the case. Right. For us, we're trying to get out there and explain to people, look, here's an alternative, whether it's a mental disorder, whether there's pain. For any number of products, there's something here that you can take that can keep you in a positive frame of mind and ultimately have positive health benefits. I mean, when you see some of the studies, right, and again, we're not quite there yet in terms of the impact, but when you hear things like certain strains or treatment of cannabis has led to a prevention of cancer metastasis, right? It's a powerful statement, right? Yeah. We may not know what that ultimate formula is today, but if there's the ability to sample or to produce goods and to try to begin to understand that cannabinoid profile and what has gone into that strain, wouldn't you want to take it every day?
Yeah.
I hate to put it this way, again, I'm a manufacturing guy, it's somewhat preventative maintenance for your body. And again, this is all central to the Resonate themes. We're not trying to make the world high. We're trying to produce a very healthy and safe alternative. We're trying to educate the community, say, look, when you don't know, come in. Because let's face it, when you put industries like this in the hands of the entrepreneurs, and this is one of the reasons why I support what Governor Baker has been doing, you can't also assume that every operator is the same. You can't just assume that every brand is the same and that it's going to be good for you. So I look at that and I say, we're committed to it, but what if someone isn't? What if the cannabis companies, for whatever they were in the Midwest, truly did put in an unsafe additive or didn't use all natural cannabis-derived terpenes and mm-hmm. cannabinoids as a way of mixing their plants? What if? We got to fix that,
David, your thoughts?
I have a lot of thoughts on this, but I think something you've touched on that really stands out to me is the educational portion of this, and that, there's all the sort of stereotypes and jokes and the old sort of the Cheech and Chong side of cannabis industry, and, you get high and eat potato chips, but it's not really that. And you go to the stores, I've been to stores, and it's, if you're not sure what you want, ask somebody, they'll tell you. Like, if you need help, I know people that take gummies because it helps them sleep at night, or it reduces anxiety at a time when everyone's on some kind of medication, as an antidepressant or an anti-anxiety medication. Is a natural alternative that doesn't have the side effects. And the dirty little secret from Big Pharma that they don't tell you is for antidepressant use, something like 20% of people have any benefit and the rest get nothing from it. I've taken them, the side effects, it actually made my condition worse. But I've taken some gummies that really, I didn't get high from them, but it took the edge off enough that I could function during the day and not have the brain going 100 miles an hour in the background. So the educational component of this, I think, is a massive dose. And the more you can educate consumers that this is not just again the stereotypes. You're gonna get high and listen to your parents' Led Zeppelin records. You're gonna actually get a wellness benefit from this. It's gonna have a positive impact on the rest of your life. That's powerful. You can get off these powerful drugs that have these other side effects. With the cancer part of this, the research that's coming out is incredible on those things. I think that's where the story of the industry goes. And I'm curious, knowing the tax situation with the 20% local taxes and the craziness, that there's an inherent bias against the product. Compared to alcohol or tobacco, which are both legal. I can open a liquor store tomorrow and sell cigarettes and booze, and it'll take me a day and a half to get a license and get product in and have at it, Mr. Ginsburg. But if I want to open a cannabis retail store, it's going to take me years and a couple million dollars in capital to make that happen. Do you think that as this becomes more normal, people understand that this is an everyday store like anything else in your neighborhood, that some of those over-regulations and excise taxes on top of that will go away?
Oof, it's so hard to speculate on that front. I mean, we talk about federal, legality, right? Yeah. And the impact that that's gonna have on the industry. But there's so much downstream infrastructure that's been set up at the state level that also translates, matriculates down to the municipal level, right? When we talk about the tax and what could happen, extremely hard to speculate. Now, what we can say is that over time, are we gonna fall into more of a normal tax bracket as federal legality rolls out? Well, let's hope. Yeah. Let's hope that things continue to trend in that direction. But there's a lot of work that needs to be done. There's a ton of work that needs to be done. I mean, and again, the vaping example is just another example of this. A reduction in that tax makes the product more affordable. Let's just start with that, yes. Right? And that's important, right? Because there's been comments that the black market is more attractive in terms of price.
Sure.
there is that challenge.
There is that challenge, and it is a barrier for many people who need it. And there are demographics that are still penalized for doing the black market because they can't afford the regulated stuff. And I do wonder if a certain level of normalization, the societal normalization of it, will help. I like to compare it to like when we bootlegged and then suddenly it was legal again. Like obviously bootleg liquor was horrible for you. It killed your liver in, you know, I don't know, a tenth of a second.
Yeah.
It's a great parallel. I mean, we call this Prohibition 2.0.
People in my age bracket, there's a whole movement going, they're quitting drinking. And it's ruined their introduction to motherhood. It's caused all sorts of issues. But anxiety is still there. The anxiety is still so much there. But this is where cannabis has come in, and it's really helped because, again, you gave that example, and it's the same thing. You try to numb the anxiety, but with alcohol, you're numbing everything. You're not spending time with their kids. You just want to push them away. With cannabis, it's different. You, as you said, you can just sort of relax. You can go to sleep. Yeah. You can step outside yourself or maybe step further into yourself, whatever the issue is, and still interact.
Yeah, and I think you look at the black market, you look at what's happening, and people have said to me, well, it's the black market that caused this. You know, that's not accurate. I'm not going to make that accusation because I don't believe that's the case. But I think that, again, there's been a lot of, or a lack of regulation. And when you look at it, the industry as a whole, what we need to have happen, right, is we need better market penetration. We need to educate people on the benefits, the pros and the cons. I've never operated candidly in the black market. Again, my background has always been in product development and manufacturing. So to me, the very basic principles of, you know, integrity and product quality and service, those are the things that don't go away, right? Mm-hmm. So we stay focused on that. But we need to continue to saturate the market so that ultimately as these products do become more mainstream, hopefully we can begin to see higher rates of purchasing, and ultimately maybe that curve from that 20%, maybe eventually it does begin to subside. You know, I'm very conscious of what I put in my body. So whether or not, and I tell this to patients and consumers all the time, all operators are not the same, and all black market operators are not the same. But the vaping ban is teaching us that there's a chemistry here, there's a science to what we do, and it needs to be treated with a very high level of responsibility if you're going to put something on the market. And here's the thing with that. I mean, that's why I come back to some of the regs that I like here in Mass and making this an organic program and all these requirements they put in place. And some people would go, God, you're just growing a plant. Well, how many years ago was it when we learned that Roundup is a carcinogenic? Exactly. You know, we grew up, right, surrounded with this stuff. I mean, I'm probably like you. You know, folks said go out there and spray the weeds with Roundup, and I, you know, probably drank a little bit of it. Yeah. Right, exactly, right? Well, now we know better. So if we know better, what we need is we need the commercial market to get out there, to be responsible, to offer good leadership, and to get patients and the consumers to come over and understand that value, understand what that long-term result is. Because if you can't do that, yeah, today it's a vaping scenario, but down the road, you know, I've heard horror stories of people that go in and they're recommended a certain edible product. You know, here, try this, and it's got an extremely high dose, and before you know it, they, you know, can't spell their name for a couple of days. That's not responsible.
No, right? It's bad. I like your attitude that the regulations are important for the industry, and I'm actually not psyched about tons of people doing it. People can distribute it perhaps, but making sure that things are dosed properly, managed properly is absolutely key to keeping this industry going. And any misuse or one bad actor in this situation can ruin an entire industry right now. And that's where the vaping went wrong. I agree with you 100%.
Well, that was a lot of information.
It definitely was. Learning about the regulations was very interesting to me.
All of us have dealt with red tape, but I can't even imagine about the red tape that they go through. This business is important. This is important for investors. It's important for banks. It's important for everybody because this is a brand new field and you don't see this very often. So we'll obviously stay in touch with him.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to Business Beat on WICN. I'm Ian Barrett.
And I'm Aaron Hayes.
See you next week.